The Baltimore Police Union says the department's top brass was unprepared, politically motivated, uncaring, and confusing to rank-and-file officers before, during, and after the unrest that hit the city in late April. The after-action report from the Fraternal Order of Police was released just a few hours before Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake fired Police Commissioner Anthony Batts, citing the surge in violence across the city and not the scathing FOP report as the reason for Batts' dismissal. Bob Cherry, past president of the FOP, talks about the report in this second hour of the show. Plus, Munir Bahar, founder of the 300-Men March, has details on Friday's anti-violence march, an annual event that has taken on heightened meaning this year. More midday after the news. And welcome back to the second hour of midday here. Dan Rodericks here, 410-662-8780. If you'd like to join us for live talk during this hour of the show, or send in comments by email, midday@wypr.org. I'll be glad to read them on the air. We were talking about Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake of Baltimore, her decision yesterday to fire the police commissioner, Anthony Batts. This came a few hours after the Fraternal Order of Police, the union representing the rank-and-file police officers of Baltimore City, released a scathing after-action review, it's called. In it, several officers filed personal testimony that amounted to a picture of top leadership they described as unprepared, politically motivated, uncaring, and confusing during and following the unrest that hit the city April 25th and 27th that afternoon after the funeral of Freddie Gray. The morale of the department, quote, has suffered greatly, says the president of the FOP, Gene Ryan. Other problems persist, including faulty and outdated riot equipment, a lack of training for civil unrest, a breakdown in communication before, during, and after the riots, and tactical errors that led to more than 200 officers being injured. In addition, officers reported that they were told by top leadership, quote, not to intervene or engage the rioters, and, quote, not to wear helmets, even as rocks and bricks were being thrown at them in the streets by angry protesters. We're going to talk about that in this hour of the show with Bob Cherry, president of the Fraternal Order of, immediate past president of the Fraternal Order of Police. He was succeeded by Gene Ryan. Before we do that, though, here's another excerpt from my interview with Kevin Davis, who is now serving as interim commissioner. He was deputy commissioner just on Tuesday when this interview took place, and I asked him about what police lacked in their response to the unrest.
The three things that I like to highlight that Baltimore didn't have as much as it should have had is training, equipment, and experience. So you need training, equipment, and experience to prevail in a riot scenario. My experience with riots in Prince George's County, our first one was in 2000 when the Terps finally made it to the Final Four and lost. There's so many similarities between where Prince George's County was in 2000 and where Baltimore is in 2015. We didn't have the training. We didn't have the equipment. And a lot of the criticisms levied against us in 2000 were the same criticisms. It's a larger scale in Baltimore, but the same criticisms we're getting right now. So I can tell you now that the civil disturbance training and the mobile field force training that our folks are undergoing right now to include the arrival of full-body riot suits and less lethal tools, gas masks. We didn't even have gas masks. And a lot of those tools, those less lethal tools, will help quell a riot scenario very quickly, and we just didn't have that.
I pushed a little further with Deputy Commissioner, now Interim Commissioner Davis, to ask what went wrong during the riots.
Dan, we were about 1,000 police officers short that day, and hopefully our mutual aid discussions right now will prevent that from happening in the future. But we anticipated a level of disorder, certainly not the level of violence that actually occurred, and we just didn't have enough police officers to put in the places where we needed to put them to quell the level of disturbance, quite frankly, that took place. And again, at the mall, you saw a police officers who did not have shields. You saw police officers that weren't equipped with full riot protection from head to toe. You saw police officers without gas masks and without less lethal tools that would help us quell that scenario quicker. We have those things now. We've been trained and we've acquired that equipment. So hopefully that'll never occur again.
Again, interim police commissioner of Baltimore now, Kevin Davis, who just arrived here in January, having been police chief in Anne Arundel County in his last role. Now, Bob Cherry, immediate past president of the Fraternal Order of Police, to talk about the after-action review that was released yesterday. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Dan. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, nice to hear from you. One question I had off the top of my head, Gene Ryan stopped short of calling for Police Commissioner Batts to resign yesterday. Was the FOP planning to take a vote of no confidence in the commissioner?
Well, what we were planning to do was give our members, such the public, an opportunity to read the AAR and then bring them in all next week. I don't know how we were going to word the questions we were going to ask our membership, but we clearly were going to ask them lines similar to, you know, do you have faith and confidence in the leadership at this moment moving forward? And I think that's, you know, what we wanted to hear from our members, and I think that's what the public, especially in the, you know, last hour here from Senator Pugh and your listeners, I think are talking about right now, Dan, is how do we move forward? And I think, you know, after reading your piece today in The Sun, I think it says volumes about, you know, where we're going. You know, whether or not Commissioner Batts is going to go before or after, or whether we even published such a report, you know, he's gone now. And I think what we need to do as a city is, you know, come together and find a way so this, one, doesn't happen again, but focus on what the problem is right now, which is the violent crime. And I know our men and women are up to that task.
I have to ask you this. Gene Ryan said at the press conference yesterday that overall the incident showed, meaning April 27th in particular, showed that the response by the top commanders, plural, was unprepared, politically motivated, uncaring, and confusing. Kevin Davis, now interim commissioner, was, you know, part of the top command. He's one of three deputy commissioners at the time. Isn't he subject to this criticism, too?
Well, let me just say this. I mean, you know, we put out a statement yesterday that we intend to work with Commissioner Davis, and we mean that. I think that the AAR, you know, is a reflection of our offices. You know, I was kind of surprised with Kevin Harris and his statement on behalf of the mayor yesterday, you know, blasting our piece as the same old playbook. Ironically, we mentioned PERF a number of times in our recommendations, the Police Executive Research Forum, because it's an organization, one, that I respect, and a lot of our people in the rank and file respect, and we mentioned them, and the irony was that they had called PERF in to do their own AAR. So, you know, one, for Mr. Harris to easily dismiss our report when it's actually a reflection of the offices on the street, I thought was, you know, kind of unbecoming. When it comes to the top commanders, Dan, if you notice, you know, we didn't mention anyone by name, and we did that on purpose. At the end of the day, President Truman said the buck stops with the top cop, the buck stops with the mayor, and the buck stops with Gene Ryan as the head of the FOP. And we weren't going to start pointing fingers or picking out names when it comes to quote-unquote top commanders. The report was something that needed to be done because no one was taking, you know, no one was going to do it. I mean, we didn't, you know, the mayor claimed that by doing this AAR, we were not going to heal the city. We looked just the opposite. And it's ironic now that she's now doing her own AAR. We thought it was important that we get from our officers who were on the street, on those front lines on Saturday and again on Monday, as Commissioner Davis just said prior to you with that tape you played, what was your experience like out there? And what can we do to put on paper so that it doesn't happen again, and give the administration and give the police commanders who are still there at the BPD, including Commissioner Davis, an opportunity to see what our guys are thinking, what we think we need to do moving forward, and that's why we did it. So, again, it's not about pointing fingers right now. I think we need to move forward. We want to put this behind us, but we don't want it to happen again. And you know, Dan, I listened to Senator Pugh the first hour or whatever about cops living in the city. Let me just say a few more things about our police. And I'm not just saying myself, who have lived in the city since I came down here from Boston. Close to 30% of our cops now live in Baltimore. That is an increase from 10% just 10, 15 years ago. The cops on the street of Baltimore want to get the job done. They're not calling in sick. They're not acting like they don't want to come to work. Are they concerned about what happened, you know, a couple months ago? Yeah. But we're determined to get the job done. I work in a district, Dan, right now, and I got to tell you, I'm so impressed with the men and women who are out there. They're still pulling guns off the street. They're hitting houses that need to be hit, who are stashing drugs and, you know, just plaguing the neighborhood with the thugs that we want removed from the city streets. And my, you know, I don't want to say my call, whatever, but I think our call from the FOP to the mayor is we want to work with you to grow this city. Just give us the tools to do it. Give us the leaders who we want to follow. And we just ask the public to stop cutting us down every time something goes wrong, because there's a lot of good men and women out there who are getting the job done, and for whatever reason, they just don't get the credit. You know, there's a reason why there's 100-plus shootings in the city since, you know, the riots and all these murders. But guess what? We're still going out there every day and every night, and we're going to keep doing that. I hope this AAR gives people an opportunity to look at it. We know it's not perfect, but give us a chance to get the job done. Just back us up, you know, when the rubber meets the road.
All right, Bob, I'm all for looking forward, too, but this is an after-action review looking back to April 25th and 27th. So I have a couple more questions about that. Oh, and one of those questions actually comes from a listener, Jay, by Twitter, Midday WYPR on Twitter. So this is what he's wondering. Two parts of this question. Do you think a more heavy-handed police response would have added fuel and further resentment, or was order more important? He says, whether intentional or not, I think the police response to the riots was appropriate. Things fizzled out relatively quickly. Now, what are you guys saying, though? Are you saying that more officers should have been free to, you know, attack, counterattack? Yeah, the rioters, demonstrators who threw things at them?
Am I answering your question or Jay's question?
Well, it's both. It's a combination right there, so go ahead.
Let me just say, I think, like, you know, I hear what Jay's saying, but I think the words that he's using is exactly what we didn't need at that time, this whole heavy-handed response. Police stand act when they see, hear, or come into contact with information that we need to act on. If I see someone running out of a bank and they're carrying a gun and, you know, there's an alarm going off and I don't take action, that's cowardly, and that's not what we expect of our officers. If I take action and chase down that suspect, am I being heavy-handed? So when I pulled up with my officers and the other officers responded to North Ave in Pennsylvania that Monday the 27th, and we see the CVS beginning to burn, should we just stand in a line and not engage? Do we know who's in that CVS? Are there any clerks? Are there people being held hostage? Are there kids down there? Let me tell you something, Dan. It's not a question of whether it's heavy-handed or not. Police are hired to do a job. And if they don't want to do it, then they shouldn't be on the force. But to refer to it heavy-handed, where the protesters can get break through the line, they can do that. I agree. You need to have a strategy. You need to have tactics when it comes to holding the line, when it comes to moving forward or even retreating. But the least thing that you need to do, you have to act, and that's what we're called to do, and that's what we need to do. And I think our AAR shows that in a number of areas we weren't allowed to act. We didn't have the tools to carry forward the things that we wanted to do when we did want to act, and we didn't feel the support from City Hall and a lot of people, but people across the city who just wanted to attack us for, I guess, just being police.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we need to get that AAR out there, because what we said in the conclusion is what we mean. We don't want to see this happen again to Baltimore. We want to grow the city the way the mayor does. More of our cops are living in the city, and the cops who are out there right now just want to be backed by leadership, both from the BPD and City Hall, and let us get the job done.
All right, Bob, I don't want to see a riot again. No one wants to see a riot again. If there is a riot again, or that looks like there's going to be trouble, and police present in a way they did in this situation, you know, with riot gear, we want them to take preparations for that. Is FOP suggesting that officers should be allowed to make more arrests, that they should allow to counterattack those who attack them? I mean, it's a different situation than seeing someone run from a bank with a gun. I appreciate what you're saying there. I don't consider it heavy-handed for a police officer to do his job and chase down somebody who's emerged from a bank with a gun But in a riot situation, you have to admit this is a special situation. You don't want to escalate the situation.
Hey, Dan, I hear you. What I'm saying, what the FOP is saying, is were this to occur again, or were we to be put in a similar position moving forward, just give our commanders and our officers the ability and, you know, the legitimacy via City Hall or whoever's going to be calling the shots from there in terms of, hey, I appoint you as police commissioner, you're going to do what I tell you to do, just step back and let us do what we need to do to protect the city, to protect the citizens and the property that we have to protect. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't know where, you know, what you're asking there. I mean, we just need, you know, our frontline supervisors need to be able to make decisions on the front line in a civil situation when it comes to making arrests without having to call commanders to check with legal to see if this arrest is valid or not. Mm-hmm. Give us the authority to do what we need to do. If we were to put in this situation again, give us the experience and the training that our officers are asking for, and, you know, give us the equipment that's needed again. And you and I both agree on this. I think everyone in the city does, in the unlikely event that something like this happens again. That's what we're saying.
Okay. And one particular thing here, Bob, before we leave you, there was a criticism of basically saying that it was a tactical error of advancing and then retreating, that these orders were confusing to officers, advance and then retreat. And so you think this was just from inexperience of commanders or poor communication or what?
Let me just say this. I mean, I know Commissioner Davis mentioned, you know, experience. I still have a lot of faith in some of the commanders that work in the BPD. These are the officers that I came up with as a young cop 20-something years ago. And I think that it's not so much inexperience. I think there were a lot of people, unfortunately, downtown calling shots. I think it was unfortunate that the top cop, you know, Commissioner Batts, didn't, if anything, you know, this whole argument of a stand down, hold the line, whether that order was given or not, or however it was given in so many different words, and we know it was given, it's still the responsibility of the top cop to say, well, you know what, move forward and let's hold this. When I think of that Monday, the 27th, this is an example for the public to understand about the moving forward and then retreating. I remember, you know, we had moved across North Avenue, and there were a couple of cars that were burning up at the intersection of North Fulton and West North. And once we had secured Fulton and North and put the cars out, you know, the fire, we got the BCFD to get in there. We then retreated back to Pennsylvania Avenue. Well, while we retreated, the same thugs that had stolen those cars and were driving them around and crashing into, you know, all the cars that were parked in North Ave, they relit them on fire. So what we had to do, Dan, was bring the line back together and go back down to Fulton Ave to put the cars out. I think that's just one example of many that had occurred throughout that Saturday and Monday that was a concern to our offices. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize, well, if you don't continue to hold the intersection and call for a tow truck to get the vehicles out of the intersection, they're going to come back and relight them. And I think that's just an example of the frustration that our men and women on the front lines in this department had with the whole advance retreat, you know, mentality, right, or the orders that were given those 2 days in late April.
Bob, just one more question. On the cover of the After Action Review, the quote from Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, a quote that'll probably haunt her through the next election and beyond: we also gave those who wish to destroy space to do that. Now, the mayor says she misspoke. She didn't mean to say that she gave an order to violent demonstrators to allow violent demonstrators to destroy a police cruiser or a plate glass window at Harbor Place or anything like that. She stepped back, tried to correct this the day after that statement was uttered, and she got a lot of heat for it, especially in conservative talk show media. Putting that on the cover, though, it sort of says that the FOP believes that that was the order given. It raises its credibility in some way.
I don't know if is this a question or?
Yeah, I mean, well, do you think? Okay, my question is, do you think that's fair to the mayor?
I think what's fair is the conversation that the mayor and the voters will be having moving into next year.
Okay. All right, Bob. Listen.
All right. Hey, Dan, it's always good talking
to
you.
Thank you for your time. We'll leave it at that. Yep. 410-662-8780. Short break on Midday. We'll come back and talk some more, take your phone calls, and I'll be speaking with Munir Bahar, founder of the 300 Men March. It's coming up on Friday night, 6:30 p.m. On North Avenue. I want to tell you about that. Munir and I are going to talk and reflect a little bit on all this news of the last week, the last 2.5 months here in Baltimore, and you can too. 410-662-8780. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodrigues here. Quickly, let's listen to this. This is another excerpt from my interview on Tuesday with Deputy Commissioner, now Interim Commissioner, Kevin Davis, on the question of police officers living in Baltimore City. As you just heard Bob Cherry say, some 30% do now. That's, 70% who do not. A lot of people raise this question. I asked Kevin Davis about it.
I tend to believe, based on my personal experiences, that cops who are born and raised in a jurisdiction are initially on a better path to engage with that particular community, because each community is different. I was born and raised inside the Beltway in Prince George's County. I didn't have to learn the culture of Prince George's County. I didn't have to learn the citizens and learn what their social mores were, because I was part of it. Now, being from or living in a jurisdiction where you police is certainly not an indicator of success. There are police officers who live outside of Baltimore City who probably spend, 14, 16, 18 hours a day in the city, serving the city. And in essence, all they probably do is sleep at their homes outside of Baltimore City. So there's no science to that. But I tend to personally believe that some association with that jurisdiction, whether it's where you live now or where you were born and raised, gives you a leg up on your police career.
I also asked Kevin Davis about April, May, June, the decline in arrests in Baltimore City. Officers upset, angry about the arrest of six of their colleagues in the death of Freddie Gray, not doing their jobs because of that, in a sort of quiet protest, not very quiet, actually, because everyone's noticed it. But anyway, I asked them about that.
Were the officers ticked off? I don't know. But do the officers have a level of anxiety that we need to recognize and empathize with and talk them through it? Absolutely. There are some anxieties about what level of reasonable suspicion and probable cause needs to exist in order for them to feel comfortable about doing their jobs. The state's attorney, she and her staff have been great. They've come in and they've had discussions with us about reasonable suspicion and probable cause. And the fact of the matter is the laws haven't changed. But our patrol officers, we're a young police department, just like most of the other big city and big county police departments in the state and in the country. So our average cop is probably 25 years old. So when a police officer has questions about his role in society, has questions about what level of reasonable suspicion or probable cause needs to exist for him or her to feel comfortable and doing what we ask them to do, and that's engage people who appear to be committing a crime or about to commit a crime, I think it's leadership's responsibility to mentor the cops through their anxieties.
Again, Kevin Davis, now the interim commissioner of Baltimore City, 410-662-8780. Munir Bahar is back in the studio with me, founder of the 300 Men March. The third annual 300 Men March will take place Friday, tomorrow evening, along North Avenue. Munir, nice to see you again.
Likewise, Dan.
More than North Avenue, or is it all of North Avenue?
It's all of North Avenue.
It's 10 miles?
Yep, 5 miles across and then 5 miles back.
We're going to talk some more about that during the last half hour of this hour, but what are your thoughts about what's happened in the last day, what you just heard in the last few minutes on the show?
I believe in one thing, that we should always put young people in our focus when even as adults we're trying to resolve issues. And I think that there are lessons when resolving issues that we can hand down to our young people and how to properly deal with or properly resolve issues. And so with that in mind, I always look at, how are we teaching young folks how to lead this city in 15 or 20 years, the next generation of leaders? And when we're confronted with these citywide issues, what strategies do we want these young people to do? It's common sense to a lot of us who, are educated or experienced. But I think sometimes we don't use that sort of common sense. And, there's a lot of find a scapegoat. I see a lot of that in Baltimore. Let's find a scapegoat for the problem instead of really addressing the systemic issues. Let's just find a scapegoat that we can blame and pretty much wait until there's no media coverage, and then we can all wipe the sweat off our foreheads.
Yeah, the systemic issues, those are the ones that are hard to get at. Well, you actually can identify them. It's resolving them, fixing them, that's the problem.
Yep.
Because it seems so daunting to people, so such a big problem, multiple-layered.
What it is, it's hard for us sometimes as adults when we're experienced, when we got careers, when we have egos. And, you know, a part of solving these problems is sometimes as an adult or as a leader saying, I did something wrong. You know what? What I did wasn't enough, or I did something wrong, or I misstepped. You know, and we see that's a hard thing to do for a lot of leaders. Instead, we want to blame somebody else.
Are you just concerned about the city, the future of the city? I mean, I know your focus is on young people. That's what the 300 Men March is really about. But, you know, it seems like I've been here for almost 40 years now. I moved here, you know. I've never seen a storm like this, a perfect storm of so many different elements coming together. I don't know. Will things settle down now with this new commissioner in place? Can he do something? I don't know. It just seems so complicated.
Not that alone. No. Again, our moving forward is not going to come from fixing one department or fixing one, you know, division of the city. It's going to come from a comprehensive refocusing of all efforts, of all departments, and a cultural sort of refocusing, saying, you know, we don't want these things in our culture. We have to agree on this, regardless if we're white, we're black, we're Muslim, we're Jew. These are the things we don't want in the culture. This is the type of city we do want, and we all have to come to the table and move forward. And that means some of us are going to lose some things, you know, and that's okay. You know, sacrifice is necessary for any type of forward evolution. So we're going to have to lose some little things that may have kept us divided, may have kept us in isolation as different communities across the city. And we say, you know what, let's put our young people in front of us. You know, they'll carry things out better than us. And so that's what my hope is, Dan. It's with the young people. I have so much hope and enthusiasm when it comes to dealing with young people, teaching them true leadership. That's what we're focused on right now. That's the coin, leadership, teaching young people how to lead, because good leadership can navigate through any issue. It's not the avoidance of issues that we'll worry about. It's how we deal with them and address them. And I think, you know, teaching young folks a new vein of leadership that is reflective of modern day American experience, urban American experience, that type of leadership has to evolve.
I'm all for it. I mean, you're setting the example, but look what you're up against. You're up against other role models in neighborhoods, especially among young males that, you know, don't behave as you do, don't carry themselves as you do.
So a lot of people ask us, why did we pick the number 300? And it's symbolic. I understand, yeah, symbolic to the movie that came out. I understand that we are going up against what some would see to be an insurmountable task, against an enemy that is too great. I understand that.
Drugs, violence, dysfunction, poverty.
Gangs, you know. However, as community servants, as role models to these young people, regardless of how daunting the task may seem, we have no choice but to carry forward.
We're going to talk to Munir about two things, the 300 Men March and also this youth organization that you've started this year. Youth, what do you call it? Youth
we
Academy?
We call it the 300 Youth Corps
youth
that
Corps,
was created
right.
Post-Baltimore riots.
Okay, good. We'll talk about that during this hour. But Munir, join me in taking some calls here. Let's talk to some of our fellow citizens about all that's happening in Baltimore. Rudy, in Baltimore, thank you for holding. Go right ahead.
I believe removing Bass from office was a good decision by the mayor. Especially if he gave orders for the police to stand fast, because the police are here to protect and to serve, regardless of what the situation is. We all feel for the death of Freddie Gray. However, if people act in an uncivilized or people act in a rioting manner, then they should be dealt with accordingly. So I believe that, you know, he should have been removed. However, the crime rate isn't going to go down because we have Kevin Davis in office. It's going to be business as usual. It'll be murders tonight. Unless the people themselves want to change, we can have all the deterrence, we can have all the programs that we want to have. We have to participate in our own life, you know, in order, you know, for things to get better. And with the five policemen, I would think twice before rebuilding in the city, because what's going to happen, whatever the verdict is, then it's going to not be enough. So it's going to happen all over again. It's just waiting to happen. And so I believe that the National Guard should be bought in, and the police should be allowed to do their duty, because I saw them myself being taunted.
What do you mean? I don't mean do their duty. You mean pull out the sticks and start beating people?
Not beating people. No, they should be allowed to do their duty as a police officer. Because if you take, for an example, if you
I'm trying to get it. What do you mean by do their duty? As if they weren't doing their duty this riot?
No. When I saw the police standing fast, what I mean by doing their duty is that when they were being assaulted, then part of their duty as an officer is to protect themselves and also to protect the citizens of Baltimore. Then they should have been allowed to arrest people who were taunting. Well, not taunting, but people who were actually assaulting them. Mm-hmm. But if they have orders to stand fast, they can't do what they were probably hired to do.
Okay. I get your point, Rudy. Thank you very much. We'll take another call. By the way, Munir was out there during the riots on April 27th, and some of your group from the 300 Men March. Do you see you saw encounters between police and citizens?
Here's what I think a lot of people are. Of course, because folks weren't out there, they don't know. And I can say this: the police department allowed community organizations space out of our request to say, "Hey, we can calm things down." Before it turns into an all-out brawl between young folks and police, let us go in there. The Nation of Islam, they were out there from the start. We came shortly after them. There was a group of pastors and preachers who were out there also. So there were community groups that were doing what we are supposed to do as community groups, and that's try to prevent escalation. Nobody's talking about this. They just talking about, police and rioters.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't just police and rioters.
That's a big ingredient.
Community groups were out there trying to actually prevent, again, an all-out brawl.
And that would be important for the future, too.
Yes.
Michael in Pasadena, thank you for calling. You're on the Midday Show.
How you doing, Dan?
All right.
I just basically wanted to comment. I'll start off by saying I agree that obviously a lot of reforms need to be made in the way that the police are run. But I also think it's equally as important to maybe combat some of the mistakes, I guess, that are kind of made like in the community in responding to these things that happen. I think there's maybe a tendency to presume innocence if a black person is killed. If they're in lack of any evidence, there's maybe a tendency to, you know, assume guilt on the part of the police officer. And I don't think either is necessarily correct. Like, I mean, guilt shouldn't be a knee-jerk reaction, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wondered, you know, like, is there anything that anyone's doing to maybe try to get the community to see things from the police perspective so that they can get an understanding of what's going on and try to understand the people that they're rioting against protesting against, and then and so on. Sorry.
Yeah. That goes back to the conversation we had in the previous hour about this fracture between citizens and the police. And I mean, it's not citywide. It's not every place, but there's certain communities that have been more affected by the practices of the conduct of police in Baltimore City, the war on drugs that we asked the police to prosecute in the streets than others. Go back to the O'Malley administration again, too, you know, arrest fest, 100,000 arrests in a single month in 2005, and very close to that number in other months, zero tolerance policing. So there's a lot of people who have memories of all of that, experiences with all that, who became very clear during this Freddie Gray episode here, still harbor great resentment for that. By the way, Do you pick up on this in neighborhoods when you go out to talk to young people, Munir?
Yeah, we find more, I believe, young folks worried about their day-to-day survival. And that survival, the predominant part of that survival is escaping the position of being shot or shot at by another young black male.
Okay, not survival of the police. It's survival of another black male
in the city. Surviving in the hood.
And what is going on there. I mean, this is the insight I like to get from you. They're concerned about, you know, who they speak to, who they get mixed up with, they look cross at or something. And what,
concerned about how they carry themselves, concerned about their safety, concerned about, you know, who they're rolling with, concerned about, you know, hey, do I join the drug game to blend in so I don't, you know, seem like I'm an outsider or whatever. I mean, it's all internal things. It's about survival. It's about eating, you know, the next day. It's about rising up in a situation that you and your heart may not want to be in, but your circumstances just put you there.
Let's take another call. Thank you, Munir. Sid in Reisterstown, thanks for calling. You're on Midday.
Thank you for taking my call, Dan. I have two quick comments, and then I'll let you and your panel discuss whatever. The first has to do with the quotation which was put on the cover of the FOP report.
Oh, yeah.
That quoting the mayor as saying, now I'm paraphrasing now, I don't have a copy in front of me, so it's saying something like, you also let those who are going to be violent commit their violence.
We gave those who wish to destroy space to do that. That's the quote.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what they left out was the first part of what she said. The first part was, and I'm paraphrasing, whenever you allow people to exercise their constitutional right to assemble and protest, comma, you also give the violent people, and if you look at all the demonstrations, I don't care whether it's in Baltimore City or in the European capitals, when the group of 8 or 20, when they would gather, there would also be the violent protesters wreaking havoc. The second thing I'd like to raise is the issue, the head of the FOP, when the state's attorney charged the 6 officers in the Freddie Gray death, there was a police department official policy in effect, which they all failed to carry out. And that was the policy that when you put a suspect, someone you've taken into custody, in the back of one of those vans, you're supposed to buckle the person in with a seatbelt or some kind of a seatbelt so the person will not flop around when they go over bumps.
Right.
Because the fact that he was not buckled in securely was part of the reason he died, that's why the medical examiner calls it homicide. He didn't call it murder. He didn't call it assassination. A homicide simply means that the person died as the result of an action or failure to act of another human being.
Thank you, Sid. Thanks very much. I've got to take a break. I just wanted to say, I don't defend politicians. I really don't. I'm not a big fan of any particular politician. I'm nice to them. I interview them. I don't, I don't give them money. The mayor of Baltimore, you know, I have issues with her. Sometimes I think she does certain things well, other things not so well. And this particular quote, I just think it's unfair to keep using this against her. Everybody gets a break sometimes, you know, when they misspeak, when they say things don't come out quite the way they intended. And in this case, people have focused on about 5 or 6 words there to suggest that she gave an order to allow people to destroy a police cruiser or plate glass windows at Harbor Place or something like that. And I just don't think it's true. I'll go over that in detail with you again someday if you want to, but it's been done over and over again in other media, and I've written about it myself. I just think it's kind of a cheap shot by the FOP to put that on the cover of that report that they want us to read. A short break, 410-662-8780. Welcome back to Midday. We'll go right back to the phone lines. Barbara in Baltimore, you're up next. Go right ahead with your comment, please.
I thank you very much. I started to comment on just what your last caller talked about, which was the statement that the mayor said. Mm. I was raised in Baltimore. I live in Pennsylvania. I took my boys, I have 6 of them, I took them out of Baltimore because of the police and some other neighborhood stuff that goes on in the communities and the school system. Hmm. But clearly, I heard this statement and I was appalled what she made. If I make a mistake right now to say a foul language, I'm going to catch myself. She never caught herself. Someone else caught her and spoke to her about the statement. So it was clear. It was clear what she said.
Okay, she was talking to reporters about what happened on Saturday night downtown on April 25th. It wasn't like, okay. It's not a quote from a dispatch of the police department. The mayor says, give them room to destroy or something. I mean, if you read, Barbara, if you, I guess I got to post this on my Facebook page.
Yes,
you should, please. I remember people, I know you heard it on TV, but if you go back and you read the comment again, you see where the mistake was made. And then her office put out a statement the next day clarifying what the mayor meant. But anyway, they focused on those words to continue not just to criticize her, but to suggest that she gave an order for people for the police to allow people to destroy things. And the FOP is sort of making that part of their imprimatur here on their review. Anyway, I mean, do you think the mayor? So do you actually think the mayor would tell the police to allow people to destroy a police cruiser and plate glass windows?
I would hope not. Would hope not. But when I heard it come across, actually in that session when she was speaking, I was appalled. Mouth dropped in awe.
Yeah, a lot of people were surprised by that. But then I'm just saying it was explained the next day. Anyway, I got to drop that subject and move on to Munir Bahar. Thank you, Barbara. Munir, Friday night, the 300 Men March takes place again on North Avenue. You had the first one.
2013.
Yeah, during a summer of violence, a surge in violence. I wouldn't say, I don't like the word spike. It just went up again during that summer. Remember that? That's what got you out on the street the first time.
Yeah.
And you had an amazing turnout the first time.
Yeah.
So what do you want folks to do now? This is an anti-violence march. The message is
that we must stop killing each other. That's our simple tagline. And the thing is, it's about continuity. It's about consistency. You know, we're not looking for anything different than what we were looking for in 2013, and that's an end and a decrease to the violence. But we know what a prerequisite to a decrease in violence is: more men specifically have to get involved, because we're in a city where there's historically there's a low level of male participation, male mentorship in a lot of young folks' lives. Now, it is, we can look at the statistics, it's mostly men killing men. It's mostly boys being recruited into the ranks of killers and drug dealers. So, you know, it is a male issue for the most part, and that's why we feel that we need to continuously call men to get involved. Post-riots, we said, you know, we're in a state of an emergency. The murder rate just started going sky high. And so in a state of an emergency, you know, that calls for us to reevaluate our priorities at that moment. Right now, we are asking more citizens to make ending this violence a priority in their life, a priority in the city. Then we can go back to normal. But when we have days and weeks where children literally are being murdered, I mean, every other day it's a child being shot or murdered, you know, how can we just continue a normal way of life?
I wonder if you thought about this. So you get a big turnout, because I'd like to do this with you. It's 10 miles, right?
Yes.
I'd like to do this with you myself Friday night. You get a big turnout, you get television coverage, nice big photograph in the Baltimore Sun.
The result?
The guys out there who, you know, have a gun in their hip and, I don't know, they're collecting money from somebody. If they don't pay them on Saturday or Sunday, they're going to kill them. I don't know what goes on, but what message do they get out of that? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, well, it's about inspiring. You know, it's about inspiring people. I once was a guy.
How do you inspire a guy with a gun, though?
Well, I used to be a guy with a gun. And then when I went to college, Morgan State University, I was inspired to change my life. Beforehand, I was in the streets. But because of what I was exposed to, I was inspired to change my life. I was inspired to become a business leader and a community advocate. I was inspired to do so.
How? Who did it? There wasn't a 300-man march at that time.
No, but there were some other cultural things that were happening on campus, as well as, of course, I got to credit my mother for inspiring me as a child.
Your mother. Give your mother credit, of course. But you got to campus. So there's a guy I'm thinking of. I don't know who he is, but people are getting shot in the city, so I assume these guys are hanging out someplace and they have guns, and they're involved in something that's going to lead to another homicide in the city. What do they... Is this a message for them?
This is a message for everybody. This is a message for the whole city. One, it's on a lot of different levels. You know, one I love to highlight is the fact that we have people of all races, people of all religious backgrounds, people of all political views that come out for this march. So right there, that's a message of true community unity. You know, it's not one political division. It's not all black folks. It's not all Christian. So that's inspiring to a lot of folks right there. I mean, just in the past 2 years, I've been able to inspire over 70 guys to do our street engagement walks.
Every Friday?
Every Friday night. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had over 70 guys participate in that. So they were inspired from that initial march. Now, there's some other guys on the street who I'll never know their name. I may never see them again. But just so may be inspired to turn a new leaf because they saw 500 men walk by all saying peace and all saying we got to stop killing each other.
Well, let's do it Friday night at 6:30. Anybody can participate in this.
Yes.
You'd like people to register.
Men and young boys, yes.
Men and young boys especially. What about women? And women ask you about this.
Yeah, all the time. Well, we have a women's support committee, and they handle all the logistics for the march. So they're going to be out there to deal with the logistics. But this is a male-only march because, again, it's symbolism of what's needed in terms of more male involvement.
Okay. You can register online through the 300 Men March website. You can find a link to it on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. You can also get information about the youth corps that Munir mentioned earlier. He has 10 boys. What ages are they?
15 through 19. And it's a 10-week leadership program that we created post-riots to teach young people leadership skills.
And so they come to your core community?
Yes. Yep.
That's
they come
to
our facility.
Your COR community is your training center, right?
Yep, the Core Health Institute in Pigtown.
Okay. So I'll see you Friday night.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's hang with me. We got time for another call in here. Ben in Baltimore, go right ahead. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just had a comment regarding one of your callers who stated, you know, how do we connect the police officers to the community? And I had called in the past and talked about how most of them don't live in the city. And then you also, within the last comment that you were making, Dan, you said, how do we inspire these individuals and where do we get the inspiration? Why, you know, I think police officers can inspire if they involve themselves in the community past their job, you know, after work, going into programs. There's a lot of sports players who are required to go into the community after they're done with their season, to interact with the community, with the children. What would it be like if we can have the police officers who can maybe once a month, once every other week, every 3 weeks, to really come into the community off hours and really participate within the community? And maybe they'll be able to, you know, sort of soften this hardness that has come about between the two groups.
Hmm. Ben, yeah, appreciate your thoughts on that, Ben. Thank you very much. Yeah, it certainly could be more of that. I think Anthony Batts, the commissioner who's now the ex-commissioner, I think he was trying to get some of that done with the department during his tenure, and we'll see if that continues. I wouldn't be surprised if it did come from the interim commissioner, Kevin Davis. 300menmarch.com is the website, a movement against community violence led by our guest in this hour of the show, Munir Bahar, who's the founder of it. This is taking place Friday, starting at 6:30 p.m. Where is the rally point? Where do you
North
start?
North Avenue and Hilton Street. It's 3400 West North Avenue. It's at the top of furthermost west point of North Avenue.
Well, the nation and the world has seen a lot of disturbing photographs, images, video of Baltimore in the last 2.5 months. It'd be great if they saw a couple of thousand, 3,000 men marching against violence in Baltimore City on North Avenue on Friday night. I think it would be a great thing. So think about doing that, guys. And thank you very much, Munir, for your part in this. Keep on keeping on, says one of our listeners, Ferndale Slim. He wrote in to say, keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
Munir. Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in today. And thank you for your calls and comments. More on this tomorrow on the Midday Friday show. So we'll see you at noon mañana. Have a great afternoon.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producers are Michael Himowitz, Melody Simmons, and Connor Graham. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.